This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we have one sponsor for the show, and that's our good friends at Jam Software. We'll tell you more about them as the show goes on. Bradley, what's up?
Oh, beautiful day here in Chattanooga. We are finishing up exam week, our standardized testing. So this is the first time we've ever done it on the iPads, so it was like somewhat stressful getting started, but it's like one of those where if you have the right tools, it really should be simple, but it was just nice to get it. We had one hitch, but it was nothing to do with me, so I'm thankful of that, but we'll talk about that more as we get on the show. One bit of follow-up from last week, and we would like to credit follow-up, the whole follow-up section to John Syracusa, and just for creating the concept of follow up on podcast. I'm assuming, Fraser, you know the reference to what I'm talking about.
This is
about
a thing this month on podcast, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
The reference is what? Reconcilable Differences, his podcast. Yeah. He kind of goes off the chain about follow up.
And he did create it, and so we will credit the idea of following up things from the last show to our good friend John Syracusa, who is probably, I will say, probably my favorite podcaster. I will say. Like, Hypercritical will probably go down as my favorite podcast of all time.
Yeah, that was a good show.
That was a very, very good show. I mentioned we had a broken iPad, and like Apple was going to charge like $250 or maybe it was $275 to fix the screen. It was a broken iPad Air 2, and I thought, well, that's crazy. I can just buy like a new iPad for $299. And well, it turns out like we have one of those like local franchises. It's called CPR, it's Cell Phone Repair, that's opened up here in Chattanooga. And the owner is a guy I went to high school with, and his wife is a former student of our headmaster. So we like, you know, they gave us like a rate of like $188 for the, you know, it's like a corporate discount, I guess, assuming because we would hopefully for them, or hopefully not for us, sending more over time. I said, well, look, we'll fix it for $188. So you know what? I'll do that. Like, that's in the realm of like where it makes sense to have it fixed. And so they came and picked it up and had it for like a couple of days and brought it back. And so far I've been using it. I can't tell. The thing about these screen replacements that are I found is it's like everything will functionally work. And then every once in a while you'll just be able to tell like something won't be as smooth. And so but so far it's been good. And I think probably the helpful thing is these are the Air 2s and then not the Pros.
Yeah, they're a slightly older generation. The parts are better understood, better made. I think one of the things that sometimes does for third-party screen repairs is once the device has been through a number of cycles of being warm and then being cool and heat and cooling, the glue can start to give up and things like that. So occasionally you see these kind of like very catastrophic failures where, you know, the thing is fine and then the screen just falls off one day or something because the glue is finally given up. I'm not saying that's necessarily going to happen to you, Bradley, but just I've heard that from certain people who've had phones replaced in that kind of way as well.
Yeah, we got a 6-month warranty. And, you know, if it doesn't work, we know. And if it works, okay, we've got a good option for these, hopefully, you know, very few. And so, yeah, they brought it back and they actually put a tempered glass screen protector on there as well. And that was nice of them to do that. It's nice to be some, you know, obviously we could be a good source of revenue from them. Again, hopefully not for us, but for them, they'd like to. But it was a nice service. It was nice. They just came and picked it up and took it back and brought it back. And you know, being like a one-person IT shop, I really appreciate that kind of help. There are just times I literally don't have the time to drive places during the day. Like if we need like a cable and a pinch, like the thought of having to like just drive to Best Buy to buy something, it just screws up your whole day.
You get that drone delivery going from Amazon. Just
bingo.
Get your QR code mat out in the playground and get stuff dropped off.
It never fails. Like when I leave the office, my email blows up like crazy. So what we want to talk about this week was standardized testing and just the whole thing around that of like what you can do to help prepare. More and more, obviously, schools are moving to that model of digital delivery with this. Mm-hmm. And what's, you know, and there was a lot of prep that went into this from our academic folks, like our academic counselors. So obviously, I didn't do much on the prep side, but I've realized like it's way more work on the front end to prepare for this, but it's way easier on the back end. So we already have the results of all the tests we've taken, our students have taken, because it's like, you know, outside of the non-writing part, but everything that's multiple choice, we have all the answers so far. But there was a lot of work on the front end to get the system built, get the students built, all the testing of the apps. And so we'll start first, like, you know, if you're doing this, start first with thinking about your network. Okay, how can you simulate the test? And this can be difficult. One of the things that our testing app, and I'll put a link to our app, it's from our vendor. One of the things it had built in, which was nice, was a network simulator test. So you could set up 20 iPads in a classroom and get them all going at the same time, and it would kind of give you results like, hey, everything looked great. So you'd know, like, are you ready for that? So that was really nice. Now, if your testing app doesn't have that, like, it is probably hard to simulate the exact thing. I mean, you may can get a few iPads going with some video streams and just to see how it's going to hold up. But these testing apps aren't, in my experience, aren't very bandwidth heavy. I mean, it's a lot of text and a lot of just bits and bytes going across the network.
But in a world where you're hitting YouTube and all that kind of stuff on a normal basis, I don't think these tests are going to add very much to your normal basic load of, you know, browsing the web with a class or something like that.
And the only thing you would think about like where students are going to be at. So if you normally got like 20 students in this room, but then like today you're like moving 40 kids in this other room, like, do you have good coverage, adequate Wi-Fi coverage in that location? Like, if it's not a place that students are normally at, that's something to think about.
And of course, Bradley, if you do move an access point or something, be aware that you might be introducing a problem as well as fixing a problem. You might need to power down something somewhere else just to make sure you don't end up with some interference or something as well.
Well, and on that same line, like, don't plan any major like network firmware upgrades around the testing cycle. Like, everything's working fine, just wait till you're done. There's just no reason to, because I mean, nothing is perfect. And let's say a firmware's botched or there is a bug in it. Just if your network's running fine, just leave it be until after the testing. This is not the time to do a switch firmware upgrade.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, in the UK, we don't tend to have testing apps as such. The thing with standardized testing in the UK for the most part, or at least in Scotland, is that, we haven't had it for a number of years, but the Scottish government have just decided to bring it back in recently. And there's no way that's happening electronically, I don't think. So for our kind of final year exams, we do have some kids who use IT in the exams, but they're very much the minority rather than everybody. So I know you're like putting the whole cohort of students through those kind of tests, Bradley, but we would be doing it for maybe one pupil or two pupils out of the whole year group who maybe have some kind of motor skill impairment or learning disability or something that they need to have that IT support. So for us, it's more of an exception rather than the rule, but we still we would still do it on iPad, and we would still do it up in that those higher levels of the school as well. So I'll throw in whatever our situation might differ from yours a little bit, but the basic ideas are pretty much the same all over.
Another thing to think about doing a few weeks before your exam is to replace any UPS batteries like you may have along your network. Like, if you have some just cheaper ones powering some of your smaller switches, think about that. Like, just take the time, okay, let's replace these UPSs. You don't want those things like beeping and all that there in the testing, or if you have to have a power outage, you want those things to be fully working. So those are relatively inexpensive to place. That's kind of my spiel on kind of network. The problem, I guess my big takeaway is don't change anything right around testing time, and just make sure your network's up to snuff. But if it's not, you probably already know that. And most of your users probably know that as well.
And they live it every day for sure.
Yes. The next section is the iPad prep, and we're going to have a very, very helpful support document from Apple in this on the various kind of things you can do to set up your iPad for testing assessment. Number one, I would recommend you at least be on iOS 10 on all these devices before you do it. I would assume everything's going to support that. I actually rolled all of ours to 10.3.1 before the test. I probably shouldn't have done that, but that was fun. But everything worked fine. I have all but 9 iPads on 10.3.1 now, so that's a pretty good number, I would say.
Yeah, that's pretty good. You're way ahead of us. Although we've just had a 2-week holiday in between times. So, 10.3 came out just before we all left for the holiday. So, no way I was going to get to everybody at that point. But 10.3.1 is something I'm going to push for over the next couple of days.
Yeah, and the ones that I don't are like on 10.2. And I will say, like, whatever changes have seemed like happened with the way software, you can push software updates, they seem to be working better. Like, they used to work it was hit or miss where you could push a software update, mm-hmm. but it seems to work a lot better now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious to see how that works. You know, on 10.3, you now have this command at the low level. It's called install as soon as possible. And what that does is it starts to kind of bug the user every time they unlock the iPad to update the software and update the software. So I'm going to push that button and see how it goes over the next couple of days.
So there's four different ways you can set up your iPad to give tests and assessments. So we'll kind of run through all these. And again,
Bradley, let me ask you a question before you go any further on that one. In terms of getting your iPad set up, how are you doing that in your NDM? Like, what's your procedure for going from? Do you go from, like, are the iPads that you're using, are they set up for students already and you're just layering on the testing on top? Or are using blanked iPads or what?
Yeah, using normal iPads, but then just adding a profile with our testing setup on there. And it supersedes anything else that's on there. And so
the students would normally use, they're using the iPad they normally use or one of the set or whatever situation you've got. And then it's put into a test configuration.
Yeah, and honestly, the testing configuration rolls out faster than any profile I've ever seen. It was basically instantaneous.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the changes are so dramatic when you put a testing configuration on that it's very obvious that it's, you know, boom, everything's gone, you know.
And this is, to me, a perfect example of where an MDM saves you money. Because when our academic folks were like, you know, when they were going through all this, they were reading like the instructions, and the instructions for the exam app mentioned like putting every iPad into guided access mode manually, and they literally thought they were going to have to do that every day.
Nope.
And so they came to me, and I was like, no. Like, and she brought me an iPad. I was like, watch this. And I hit a button, and it just like launched the app, and she was like, oh my gosh. And I mean, this is a perfect example of where, yes, the MDM is not free. It does cost money, but it saves you time. And this is like actual people's salaries that we're saving by not having to do that, you know, spending 30 minutes before and after the exam, you know, enabling and disabling guided access.
Yeah. I mean, for us, the situation is a little different because what we would be required to use is like a blank iPad. So the student couldn't come in and use their own iPad. It would have to be like one of our spares. And that we're fortunate we can do that because, you know, we're only doing it for one or two students at a time. If we were required to do that for every student sitting in the exam, we wouldn't have like, you know, a double deployment of iPads just so we could do it in the exam. So that's one of the things that, you know, if electronic examinations were going to become a common thing in Scotland, they would have to figure out a way in which there could be like a testing app for doing your exam because there's no way schools have got like normal iPads deployed and then also another spare for every pupil so that they can sit an exam on it. So the way that we do that is a little bit different. I think this year what we'll do is I'll take the serial numbers of the devices that are going to be used for exams and I'm going to put them into a new pre-stage setting in our MDM so that when they become enrolled, they will just automatically go into a smart group. So here are the devices that are in the exam group. They'll get a smart group. They'll get the apps installed. They'll get the profiles installed so that we can basically go from erasing the device effectively to a zero touch app setup and so on. So I think that'll probably be the way that we do that. I like to kind of restore the device between exams because sometimes a different student will be sitting on that device in the next exam. So I prefer to like do a full restore and configurator, and hopefully with going through our DP process, we can just go, you know, configure, set up, and the iPad in 20 minutes will be ready for a new exam. So that's kind of my plan. One of the things that we also have to do is at the end of our exams, and this is how digital exams go in Scotland, you do the exam digitally, right? The kids type on the iPad, and then you have to print it out on paper and send it away with the paper exams. So that's how electronic exams are done in Scotland. So our iPads still have to be on the school network so that they can print to the AirPrint printer. But what we do there is we set up an SSID called Exam Network, which is completely firewalled at the AP so that it can only communicate over AirPrint and it can only communicate with our AirPrint server. It can't communicate with any other device and it can't communicate with the internet. So one of the things that's really nice in 10.3, Bradley, is this new restriction where you can force the device to only be connected to a specific Wi-Fi network. So we can deliver the payload for that and we can say, don't even allow this device to connect to any other networks, because when you're dealing with like older students, one of the things you have to think about is, you know, is there a way that the student could circumvent all these restrictions to somehow cheat on the test? And, you know, since iOS 9 really, but also 10, the number of things that we can now control. So we can like blacklist all the apps except for the one that we want them to use. And then we can do things like now restrict access to the Wi-Fi networks and things like that as well. So even if they could get past gated access, even if they could get into settings, they still wouldn't be able to change the Wi-Fi network away from the one that we've set up. So it, really now we can control it to the nth degree, and we're very, very happy that that's, that kind of thing is now possible.
Well, it's, this is the kind of situation where you have to think of these rabbit holes that students might go down to try to get away and get through stuff. You know, it's like, okay, is the device the weakest link? Okay, the network might be the weakest link. That's, you know, it's challenging, and you have different problems too, because you're like, have 17-year-olds taking exams, or I have like 10-year-olds. Different
problems.
You know
what I say about security? It's like programming the devil's computer, you know, and I think it's this is like configuring the devil's test computer. I mean, I don't think our kids are devils or anything, but certainly, you know, you got to think about, you know, what could possibly go wrong. And see, when we started doing this, Bradley, I think it was iOS 4 or something we were using it the first time we ever did this. I actually designed, do you know what I mean when I say an attack tree in computer security? That's like where you sort of have like a tree structure where you say at the top level of the tree, it's like what went wrong. And the thing that goes wrong is a student gets access to unauthorized material through the test computer. And then you break down from that, what are all the ways in which that could happen? And then you repeat that process for every one of those scenarios. So maybe they get the device onto a new Wi-Fi network. Well, how could that possibly happen? Well, they'd have to first defeat gated access, then they'd have to remove the MDM profile, and you sort of break all of these failure scenarios down into their tiniest little components. And I did that for our first deployment, and I kind of used that not quite to formally prove, but certainly to show that the level of technical skill that you would require in order to defeat even iOS 4 was pretty significant. And with iOS 10, it's borderline impossible. At least certainly to do it without being detected, right? That's the thing. Because if I can detect that you've reconfigured the iPad during the exam, then I can just say, well, you cheated on the exam and I report you to the exam board. But, and then you know, the sanctions are what the sanctions are for cheating in the exam. But doing it without detection, way, way, way more difficult. So that's the way we do that as well. I'll just mention, Bradley, while we're here with this one, that one of the things that we do in this situation as well is we have a printed checklist that we work through, and we work through it with two members of staff. So there's me from the IT side, and we have an exam coordinator role in the school as well, which is the colleague who is responsible for basically running the exams and looking after the paperwork communication between the exam board and the school and so on. And what we do is we have this checklist that we follow, and every time what we'll do before an exam is we'll sit in with the device and we'll say, okay, have we done all these things? Because the thing is that sometimes for us the configuration is different depending on the student that's sitting. So sometimes people are allowed to have the spell checking on, sometimes they're allowed to have it off, and different things all the way down the list. So those are some of the things that we do, and I'll just tick, have I done this? And then I'll demonstrate it to my colleague that I've done it, and she'll initial that all those things were done as well. And I'll just read you some of the things that are on that list, right? So the first thing is, has the exam restrictions configuration profile been installed? Tick, yes or no. Is it on the right Wi-Fi SSID? Tick. Also, we check, have we finished the app setup assistant? Because sometimes, like, if you've just wiped a device and then installed an app, what you can do then is you may have to go through a couple of stages of setup. So if you're using Word, it may ask you to sign into an account, which you might not want to do. Or Pages, you might have to choose, do I want to use iCloud or not? All those kind of things. So we check that. We tick off whether or not we disable the spell check and the autocorrect and the full stop shortcut and the spelling menu and all of these things. And whether or not speak selection is turned on, making sure all the dictionaries are disabled. Did we pair a Bluetooth keyboard? All the things that we might want to have for that situation. And then finally, do we start gated access? Because we use gated access manually because we don't have a testing app as such. We're just using Pages or Word to do most of those exams. So I think that's quite a useful thing, particularly when you're doing a high stakes test where you're talking about exam level qualifications, to have just that little bit of paperwork behind you that says, yes, we both double checked that the iPad was set up the way it was supposed to be set up for that student. I think it's pretty helpful.
Well, it's things like that. It's a simple list, but then often those simple lists like forces you to think, okay, I've done this, because you can often forget one or two of those things.
Yeah. And especially if you're doing it for different people with slightly different configurations. So what we'll do is there's actually space at the top of the checklist as well. So you say what the date is, what the exam is, and who the pupil was that this was configured for. And then we tick off all of those things, and she'll check from her additional assessment spreadsheet that we've got the right configuration for the right student as well, depending on what it's been agreed that they're going to have in the exam and so on. So yeah, and it has been very helpful from time to time that when you're busy and you're maybe reconfiguring it sometimes between a morning and an afternoon for a different student, in the rush of the day, just to make sure you don't forget something, I think is really quite useful as well.
So before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for today. It's the great folks at Jamf. Jamf Pro is the solution for deploying, managing, and securing Apple devices. Over 3 million students are empowered by Jamf every day. Bring learning to a whole new level for your students by providing them the tools they need to succeed in today's classroom. Over 3 million students are using it right now. Start a free trial at jamf.com. That's JAMF.com. So let's work through this support doc from Apple and talk about the various ways you can lock down an iPad. And I'll explain the way we're doing it as well. So there are 4 different ways you can set up your iPads to give tests according to Apple. So the first one is automatic assessment configuration. And so this does require the app to support this. It does not require supervision. It does not require an MDM. And it works on iOS 9.3.2 or later. Now, this feature allows approved assessment developers to build apps that lock an iPad into a single into a single app, and they turn off these features at launch. The autocorrect and spell checker, predictive keyboard, dictionary lookup, keyboard shortcuts, sharing, and the universal clipboard. Our testing app didn't seem to support this because it wasn't in any of the documentation. And so I don't know of any apps that are supporting this, but I'm sure there are.
Yeah, this is something it's kind of like it's like a superpower of API that not every developer can use. And it's, like you said, Bradley, it's only for approved developers. So there's some kind of like additional agreement between Apple and these developers, Pearson probably, to basically be able to deliver this app to students' devices. And then the app sort of locks you out from all the iPad stuff that you normally could do. And then, and like you said, it doesn't require you to have supervised devices or any MDM support or anything like that. It's the app itself that does all of this stuff to your iPad. And I don't know of any apps that use it, but then I've not really looked very closely into that whole world of, standardized testing apps as such.
I mean, I wonder how you would get out of the app. Maybe you have to like finish the exam to get out of it, or maybe.
Yeah. I'm guessing there's like 2 API calls called begin autonomous mode and end autonomous mode. And the app is responsible for calling, I've now started the test, so enable all these settings. And I've finished the test, so you can release all these settings to let
the. So maybe it's like it doesn't, just launching the app doesn't activate it, but it's actually beginning the test that activates that.
Probably, yeah, I would guess so.
Hope the app doesn't freeze or anything.
But well, see, it's not, that's cool. Educational apps are always so well written, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, clearly. but you wonder like what happens like if the device runs out of battery. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
That is a concern and something to be aware of as well, because sometimes these testing apps can be really heavy on your battery. I mean, I was testing a thing yesterday, which was a sort of cognitive ability test app. It wasn't even an app; it was a website, and I sat there and I did 3 or 4 tests on it, maybe spent about an hour working in it, and it had eaten half of my iPad Pro battery. And it's a website, So just something to be aware of in your testing is check what the battery consumption is like as you go through those tests.
The next one is autonomous single app mode. And this is a feature of assessment apps that locks the iPad in for testing. If your app doesn't support this, you can set up your iPad I'm going to abbreviate it to ACAM and using your MDM provider. Your MDM provider can like install a profile that does this. And like in Jamf, this is like if you go to your I'm going to go to my profiles, and it is getting it loaded up.
So the difference between autonomous single app mode and automatic assessment configuration is the autonomous single app mode requires a supervised device enrolled in MDM. Is that right?
Yes, the autonomous single app mode, it works on 7.1 or later. It requires supervision and does require an MDM. And under Jamf, that is under the restrictions, like in the scope or the options under restrictions, and under mm-hmm. applications is at the bottom. And says ACAM will be allowed for apps with the following bundle identifiers. And you want to get the bundle ID from your testing app. And so I've got ours listed here. But then what's weird is like our testing app doesn't register that this is active. So that's what I don't understand. But it could be because I also have single app mode turned on as well. So I don't know that. And I'm not really – it's something I might test like after we get done testing. Like might remove the single app mode and then see what the restrictions does.
See, I think my understanding of this, right, is you've got autonomous single app mode and you've got single app mode. And what you're really saying with autonomous single app mode is these are the only apps on my device that are allowed to even think about starting this, right? And then once you've got that profile that says here are the apps that are whitelisted for autonomous single app mode, those apps can then go ahead and do it if they're able to do it. Whereas single app mode is something that you can apply to any app whether or not it supports it. I'm thinking this through. I'm not 100% sure I'm right here. But single app mode is, do you remember in the old days of Casper Focus? When before we had Apple Classroom, what Casper Focus would do is it would on the fly generate a single app mode profile and it would send it to all your class devices and it would lock your kids into Safari or lock them into Keynote or something like that. Today, you would probably do that in Apple Classroom if you wanted it, rather than doing it through your MDM and over the internet. But I think that's the difference between those two technologies.
And I guess the autonomous is like you could maybe give a couple apps the ability to option to load. I mean, like maybe you could say, hey, we're going to allow the Notes app for Scratch paper. Maybe, I don't know.
No, I think with single app mode, you're basically saying these iPads will only use this one app. Because the thing in the table from Apple, it says single app mode doesn't require the app to support it, whereas autonomous single app mode does require the app to support it, right?
That's
so
true.
You can apply single app mode to anything like Keynote or Skype or you know any app on the device, whereas with autonomous single app mode, you're just saying, I'm now going to allow these apps to do single app mode if they want to.
Yeah, because the autonomous section of the restrictions allows me to add more than one app. But again, it looks like the apps do need to support it. So that's in Jamf. And then our testing app does support it, but it says it's disabled. But that may be because I'm actually using single app mode. So single app mode,
They
probably conflict. Well, the single app mode supersedes everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically remote start gated access, isn't it?
Yes. Does not require app support. You can lock any app into it. It does require supervision. It does not require an MDM. So you can do this through Configurator if you wanted to, but by gosh, I don't know why you would want to do that.
It's more have to than want to, I think, isn't it?
Right. And it works on iOS 7.1 and later. And that is also under, there's a whole section under the under the options under your profiles in Jamf, and it's called single app mode. And you actually get so in there, it actually works on tvOS as well, because tvOS is now, you know, they have a lot of different apps, options. It actually has like it lists all your apps, so you don't have to know the bundle identifier. It actually lists all the apps right there, and then you get some additional options about disabling some of the things like voiceover and assistive touch and things like that. But that's under options and then single app mode.
Yeah, so you can basically push it into a particular accessibility configuration as well if you want to.
Yeah, and it's fast too. Like I mean, it is stinking fast. And like I was at home Monday because I came in Monday to get the test started. I took a personal day, and I came in, made sure everything was going, and I left. And like they texted me and said, "Hey, we're done. Can you unlock the iPads?" And I just removed those iPads from the scope, and they were basically unlocked, you know, within seconds. So it is really, really fast. It doesn't seem like it takes long at all.
So I'm kind of wondering a little bit here about my idea of being on a firewalled SSID, because if I want to do this remotely through the MDM, I'm going to have those devices accessible to the internet. And maybe in that case, instead of relying on being firewalled from the internet, I'd rely on the iOS device to have single access mode to prevent the user from getting to any other source of data. That's possibly the right way to deal with that.
Well, and again, these are like what I love about all of these is like these are things that I can do remotely. Like I'm not having to touch every iPad because I mean guided access still technically will work on this. Like if you don't have an MDM, you just want to do one iPad or something like that, that'll work. You can set these things in guided access, but I would not recommend it for like anything more than one.
Yeah. I mean, our maximum number, the thing the most we've ever had in one go was 3 students using iPads at the same time. And we do use like manual, at the moment we use manual gated access for that. And I'm thinking, just as we're talking here, Bradley, that I'm probably going to move over to using single app mode for that instead. But see, one of the reasons we use gated access was because when we were using Pages, right, for students who needed to have the spell check turned off, if you go into the Pages app, there's a way to turn spell checking on from inside Pages, right? So what we needed to do is we needed to disable the tool button inside Pages. So we had to, you know, blank out a particular area of the screen as well, so that the student couldn't go in and turn on the spell checker, even if the spell checker was off. And there's no way to do that through single access mode. So we had to actually disable one button in the user interface as well. So that required us to go into guided access manually and disable that area of the screen. It is what it is, but it's tractable as long as the numbers aren't too high. But for a whole class, that would be a killer.
Yeah, that would be, again, just on scale. And this is an area where that's the key. And this is like one of those weeks when I look like a genius for having an MDM. You know, kids are like, oh, I can't believe Mr. Bradley can do that. Anyways, that's kind of my take on some tips. We'll put that link into the show notes. Like, that's where you want to bookmark. That's where I got all my information from. And then obviously we've had some experience with this as well. But so far, like, it's worked well. It's been nice. I look like a hero, and that's always what you want your IT tools to do for you.
It's clear that Apple has put more effort into complying with all the different state regulations for standardized testing on iPads, because they want to sell iPads where people are buying Chromebooks. And I don't know if you have this requirement, Bradley, about like not having a wireless keyboard involved and things like that. Because there was a thing when the fifth generation iPad came out, it also debuted alongside a Logitech case for iPads, which clearly was designed to like turn an iPad into a standardized testing machine. And it kind of looked like it as well. But it had this weird feature where the case would hold the iPad in a landscape formation, but the case had like a pass-through lightning connector. So the keyboard for the case was a lightning keyboard, but the connection was like physical all the way through to the lightning connector. And there was like a cable inside the case that runs through to the iPad's lightning connector. So that you can say, well, this iPad with this case, there's no wireless going on in this situation. As far as I know, we don't have that particular restriction. So we offer a Bluetooth keyboard to our students in that situation, but we've seen, actually, it's quite interesting, you know, people often ask, well, what about keyboards and stuff like that? And we can offer people a Bluetooth keyboard, but I've seen more and more that some kids will just put the keyboard to one side and they'll just type on the screen because they're more used to it, they're more confident with it. And I've certainly seen that happen even in, like, you know, what are really quite high-stakes exam situations as well.
You use the tools you're comfortable with, that's for sure.
Absolutely, definitely, yeah. I mean, one of the other things that we have occasionally had issues with is like software not being particularly stable in situations like that. It's not happened for a while, but in the olden days we had one situation where we had a bit of a problem with that, and testing like the document's ability to autosave and things like that is also quite important. So both Pages and Word support autosave options as well. So just making sure that's turned on then and it's working, and maybe even testing out a couple of scenarios like that, you know, forcibly. You know, you could try something like sending the shutdown command from your MDM if you're on 10.3. You could do that during a testing situation just to see what happens to your document, you know, and just make sure that it's saved as best as it can be, or send a direct reboot command to the device and just test it that way as well. Those are some quite good options for trying to make some things happen to make sure that your security is, or your, not your security, but like your data safety is as good as it can possibly be in those situations.
And at the end of the day, wing and a prayer.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, you know, and this is why I'm so kind of uncomfortable with high stakes testing on computers of any kind. It doesn't matter. I mean, iOS is probably one of the better platforms for stability, but, you know, the way our rules are is that if something goes wrong with the technology in the exam, you're basically supposed to treat it as if like the school had gone on fire during the exam, and it goes through a kind of exceptional circumstances route where you can claim for a concession for the student if something goes wrong with technology. But we actually have our parents and students all sign off on a sort of, not a disclaimer as such, but a kind of You know, just so that everybody's clear, like, these are the things that can go wrong with an IT-based exam. And if you're accepting these conditions, then please sign here, sort of thing. Just to kind of make it very clear to everybody that while we're doing our absolute best and we've got the best technology and, you know, the best administration you can have, sometimes things just go wrong and it's not really under our control. So it's just something that people have to be aware of as well.
Right. Yeah, nobody's perfect, and there's so many variables outside of your control. One of the things we run into is a licensing issue. Like, they couldn't – we had two students who, like, there was just a bug in the system, and they had licenses, but they weren't showing on our end, so it wasn't allowing them to take an exam, and, like, it took them a day to fix it, and it's like there's nothing we can do there.
I didn't mention, Bradley, but one of the other things that happens for our tests is the digital versions of the papers get delivered to us on a DVD.
Fantastic.
So, fantastic. And the other thing is as well, we're only allowed to open them just a little bit before the exam. So, you know, if something happened where, like, that DVD wasn't readable or something, you know, we would be in quite a problem situation. So, these are all the things.
These are the days of our lives.
Yeah, now I'm not going to sleep from now till the exams. Now thinking about this topic.
Well, we'll leave it there for this week. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to our sponsor Jamf. And if you're looking to deploy an MDM for your testing, we highly recommend them. Been using them for a number of years now. You can find all of our past episodes at outofschool.net. If you want to subscribe to, you know, download and subscribe to the show. If you don't, you can do that through the Apple Podcast directory or through your favorite podcasting app, Pocket Cast, Overcast, any of those major ones. You can search for us and find it in there. And you can find me on the web at chambersdaily.com and on Twitter at Bradley Chambers.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a great week, everybody.